It's a pleasure to be here. And as you know, Oren is finishing up his book. And so I'll be here for 2 more weeks. And I've been racking my little brain around. Okay, if I do a series, what am I going to talk about? What? And then I realize everybody's talked about everything anyway. So I'm going to talk about some of the same stuff too. But I bring my perspective. So what I'm going to do for the next 3 weeks is talk about the paramis. And I'm not going to do it in any official order. So tonight I'm going to talk about forgiveness practice and relationship to wisdom, patience, and equanimity. And as we understand the paramis, they're noble qualities. They are not only noble qualities, but they're qualities to try to cultivate. So the bar is high. Can you hear me?
It's soft.
Really?
It's soft.
Mm-hmm. Really? Oh, goodness. Is that better?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. My apologies. You know, like on this end, sounds like I'm yelling.
It is
you know,
it
might be better if it's in the middle and just down a little bit.
Is that better? Oh, yeah. That's better. You think so?
Yeah.
And there are many different books about the paramis. I like the ones that are really simple. And how I understand the paramis are that they're noble qualities that you want to cultivate because they can aid in attaining enlightenment or attaining freedom. And they said that bodhisattvas have these qualities. And I think it can be anybody who has these qualities. And they are worthwhile to cultivate. And some of them overlap, so some of them are part of the heavenly abodes, like equanimity. So when I thought about this, I was thinking, okay, pick three, any three. No. What I was thinking is, how does wisdom relate to patience and equanimity? Because each of the way it's taught, the way I understand it, is that one parami leads into the other so that it helps support and cultivate the next one. But I think you can also do a hodgepodge, because what you're doing is exploring the human condition through the lens of whatever the parami is. So tonight we're going to explore it through wisdom, patience, and equanimity. And wisdom is to achieve maybe an astute or discern understanding of life in the world. Having great compassion and skillfulness means discernment. When we're young, or if we have children or grandchildren or nieces and nephews, or you're around young people or you're a teacher or whatever, you know how malleable their mind is and how inquisitive. And that they are not necessary at that time making wise choices. They're just trying to figure things out. And hopefully as they get older, they cultivate some insight with that. And as adults, hopefully that's what we're doing as well. So that we begin to say, oh, is this skillful? Is this timely? Is this wise? Is this going to cause harm? How can I be present with this? Wisdom also can be very helpful in understanding when you're sitting in with a difficult emotion or a difficult situation. Then what skills do you bring to it to have some patience and to have some equanimity? And I think equanimity is like the bomb. I don't know how else to describe it. It's develop this amazing way to accept how things are. You can do it with compassion. You can do it with wisdom. You can do it with discernment. You can do it with skillful means. And you bring a patience to it. And it's a fierceness with an impartial eye to seeing life as it is and not the way we want it to be. And that is hard. And the gift is not being attached to any account, outcome. And that is really hard. I think sometimes, I think when I was younger, like my history of romantic relationships are far and few between. So I am not the expert. However, I had fantasies going. I mean, we all have our delusions and our hopes and our longings and our yearnings. And how I would imagine someone to be and how they really are are two different things. And not always being skillful in those choices. You know, because the fantasy or the delusion or the yearning or the dream is not the reality. The reality is like, oh my God, what did I just get involved with? And you are not all that. And then you can also find the love of your life. Last weekend, I taught a day long for people with cancer. And it was such a moving and humbling and awe-inspiring day long. And there were couples there. And one of the couples said, it took me, I don't know, 8 months or 13 months to notice him. And then he says, but we've been together 37 years. So that was so wonderful. So she made him wait. And it was well worth it. And we can bring these qualities of skillfulness to wisdom to our life. We have experiences that some of them we don't want to repeat, some of them we may have to repeat, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute, I just went through this. How can I go through this again or handle this again more skillfully? For example, there was a time in my life where I was very wounded, traumatized a lot in my family. And I thought that when I had gone through the experience that I was done with it, because I went to therapy and I had friends to talk about it, and I thought I dealt with the issue. And then it came back. But it came back in a different form. It came back more subtle. And I'm like, wait a minute, I just went through this. Or you think you just went through it because it feels like it's so long and drawn out. It's like, wait a minute, how can I handle it differently? So then what happens is we begin to look at our patterns. And when we begin to look at our patterns, that's actually bringing some skill. And that's actually bringing some wisdom and using discernment. When my granddaughter was a teenager, she's like, well, I'm telling the truth, you know, with the head swinging and all the rest. And I'm like, yes, but you're not paying attention to the fact it still hurts. Is there a way you can say what you need to say and not hurt? No, because I'm telling the truth and I'm being honest. And I was like, okay, you're going to learn maybe the hard way that some people aren't able to hear it that way, and there'll be a backlash. So hopefully, as we mature as adults, we cultivate those skills to when to say something, how to say something, is it, and be aware of the impact of what we're saying, that we take responsibility for what we said. So the intention can be honorable and not even be into question, but the impact, then what happens there? And where is our responsibility there? So that is discernment. That is being very wise. I would think so. And then we have patience. And patience, I just have to bow to patience. Because sometimes life circumstances gives you these opportunities to experience patience whether you want to or not. When I was in the hospital and after I woke up and they started, I went from ICU to trauma unit, I had a lot of time on my hands. So much time. And it was, this is how it is. So here's the equanimity. This is how it is. It's not going to be any different right now. And how am I going to make the best of this? And during the period of time after I came home from the hospital, it was like all I did was go to doctor's appointments. And one of the things my sister said to me was, you have done everything they have asked. Everything. If they said jump, you said how high. And because in order to get well or as well as you can be from cancer, it's important to pay attention to yourself and what you need. And sometimes it's different than what the doctor might say, or you might not be in agreement. But then there's a way, if you have a relationship with them, that you can come to a middle world, being equanimous. And so I learned a lot about not being attached. And this is how it is, and not being attached to any outcome. When I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma stage 3, it didn't hit me. It took a long time for me to get, oh, this is serious, because I didn't have any symptoms. So it was hard to know. But I was determined to do the best with the situation. And so whatever I was told to do, within reason, I did it. And I learned more about discernment and skillfulness. Because when I was in the hospital and they had me on all these different medication cocktails, at one point I said, can I just have a day with nobody talking to me? Nobody coming in here. Nobody taking my blood. Just lunch, dinner, and that's it. Please. Oh, and give me the meds, right? Because that's what they had to do. And they said yes. Oh. And I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And I slept. I think all I did was sleep, but it was so wonderful. Because you know how you get woken up every 2 minutes for something. And I'm like, you just took my blood. I don't have any more blood to take. So that, there was something, I don't know if I was being aware that I was being wise. I just knew that the next person that talked to me, I may not be very nice. Like I could do anything laying on my back. However, you need a break sometimes. So I took care of myself and I had a break. And when they came in the next day, asking me, how are you? And I was like, oh, much better. Still in pain, but having that period of time to have some ease really made a difference. Sometimes we get opportunities. They don't seem like opportunities in when the experience is happening, where we get to reflect again on what way can I handle this situation differently so maybe there'll be a little more ease, even though I would like to have a certain outcome. Can I just be with how am I going to handle it now? So, for example, my mom passed in November, And she had been sick. And my sister had said, well, we knew she was sick, but we didn't expect her to go so quickly. And any of you who have grieved anything, anyone or anything, know that the grief is not just with that person. And it's like, can I just have that and not have all the rest of it that comes with it? And true to form, here comes every little grief, every little unresolved, every little thing along with it. And it's like, wait a minute, I just want to do this. So can you bring equanimity to that? This is how it is in this moment. This is what's arising. This is what I can handle. And then that's when the patience might come in around, okay, this is what I can endure. You know, the roller coaster of life, the ups and downs. And people would say, you're so strong, and you're so courageous, and you're so fierce. I was like, oh my goodness, let me just be quiet. Because what I was thinking was not very nice comments to make. You know, sometimes with good intention, again, sometimes it's hard to know what to say to someone. And so the wisest thing you can do is sometimes just be quiet and just say thank you. I was able to recognize, oh, I'm not going to be very nice right now, so I'll just be quiet. And I understood where it was coming from, but this body and all the changes it had gone through, it wasn't feeling all of those things. How it looks and how it experiences something can be very different. And this practice of being in balance is ongoing. All of these practices, we have opportunities all the time to cultivate this. How am I going to be with this new situation? How do I want it to be? And then what is it going to be? And then how does it turn out? And then how am I going to react or respond to that? Am I going to be all upset and everything? Am I going to bring some understanding and say, well, this is how it is, and I'll be okay? Or am I going to be impatient and want it to be something else and want an outcome? And, you know, I can't believe I'm over 60 and I'm finally getting it. That this is how it is. Not the way I want it. Not to be attached to something. And, you know, when I listen to my nieces who are in their 20s and some of the heartache and drama around relationships, I just want to say, you know, it can get easier. You just have to let go of that. And but they're in that space, in that developmental stage, where that's not what they want to hear, because that's not what's true. So to hold that, to be in that space of like just riding the waves, just riding the waves. And they come up and they go down. And sometimes they're huge and sometimes it just trickles. And just be with that. Now I was going to say something and then I forgot. So let me think for a minute. And we know this, the Buddha talked, all of everything we're learning about in relationship to the Buddhism is how to handle not getting what we want when we want it. It's that simple. So you now all are Buddhists. You all know it. And that's all you have to worry about. Hatred in any form, greed in any form, delusion, yearning, longing, they're not the bad guys. They're not the enemies. Where the struggle is, where the pain is the attachment. What we hold on to in relationship to it. Wanting more. This is who this person is, but I want more. I want this person to be something else. Am I looking really at who this person is, or my imagination? And it's usually my imagination. So the yearning, the attachment, the longing, being disappointed is being attached to something that you wanted to be a certain way, and the outcome is, this is what it is. I remember I did a talk on equanimity, and I had this little conversation as part of an example of what I was talking about. Okay, so I'm going to be two people. Well, that's easy. So, person A says, hey, what's up? Person B says, not much, you know how it is. Everything is what it is. Person A, I know what you mean. This is what it is. This is like this. Yeah. So, you know, that's how things are. So, this is their conversation. It's over. Now, all the pronouns referencing it has to do with life. And, you know, when you're in a conversation with somebody you know, sometimes those references are understood because you know each other and you know what you're referring to. Well, when you say, this is what it is, there's almost as if you're saying, I accept this, and I'm not going to try to do anything about it because this is how it is. And I've heard different people in conversations, they'll say, this is how it is. But I don't think we realize that there's a way where in that statement we're saying, I am being equanimous. I accept this is how it is. That there is, I'm not attached to an outcome. This is life. These things happen. When I was doing the cancer group and people were going around, I was just amazed at the range of experiences and how people were relating to their cancer and what was going on with their bodies. And there were people there who were just recently diagnosed, to people who were planning on assisted dying. And it was a profound acceptance of this is how it is. I can do whatever I can to help my body. I accept this is what is happening. The outcomes vary. But it wasn't like trying to get to the outcome, but just to sit with, this is what's going on, and I'm going to do the best that I can with what I have. So that mercy, that grace, brought in wisdom and patience and equanimity around, I'm living with this illness. I was just awed. So, patience is a hard one sometimes. Because it's hard to be patient sometimes. You just want to be done and finished. No, the impatient part is like, okay, hurry up yesterday. No, it's going to go the way it's going to go. Again, patience, equanimity is patience is saying, this is the way it is, this is how it's going to go. Equanimity is saying, and this is how it is. No attachments, hopefully. And wisdom is using the discernment and the skills to make a decision, understanding that patience is needed, or understanding of having balance. Now, it gets to be even more challenging when we look at the suffering in the world, because it's hard, it's extremely hard at times to be patient for change. And for those of us who've been around a few decades, we know it changes. We don't necessarily like how it is, but we know it changes. Like the year I was born, Brown versus the Board of Education was passed. That was huge. That was really huge. And as a child, going into some of the schools that were not integrated and just becoming integrated was extremely hard. And yet this significance of that passing of that law, the ramifications are still being felt to this day. And that is change. And it wasn't always easy, but it was change. So I wanted to say a little bit about forgiveness and relationship to this. One thing about these paramis, they are called, these 10 qualities are like the liberated heart that can be developed in our minds and our actions. So part of, there's one thing about explaining, there's another thing about doing. What are your actions? How do your actions reflect what you're thinking and what you're doing? We have so many, the Buddha has so many lists around how to do this and how to do that. And the Eightfold Path, for example, I'm going all over the place, but in the Eightfold Path, we have wise intention, wise view, wise action. So it goes from a thought to a perspective to an action, or some mix it up a little bit. My point is, all of what we learn through the Buddhist teachings are ways and tools to help us to experience liberation, to help us experience a decrease in suffering, and not repeating patterns, and learning from our patterns so that we make wiser choices, that we use discernment, that we cultivate patience, and that we understand the balance of this is what it is. With all the things that have happened in the last 6 decades, there have been changes. And some of them I've been attached to the outcome and been very, very disappointed in the way things have gone. And other things, it's like, okay, this is how it is. When I think about the person who's in the office now, president office, I'm not surprised by his behavior. Been around for a while, and I've seen how some white people act. And what he is doing is not surprising. It's sad. And I hope that some changes happen that'll be for the greater good. But I'm not going to hold my breath. And yet, because of his behavior, it has spurred so many wonderful engagements around the world for change that may have moved slower if he wasn't in office. And yet, because he has the catalyst for change and for some of the foolishness that he has said, and the people stand up and speak to the harm of that and saying something else can be done is pretty amazing. And, there was this last issue of The New Yorker, I think his name is Jelani Cobb, had an essay about Trump. And it was pretty interesting how he held the idea that through his shortcomings, it has spurred the potential of some major changes for the greater good. Mm-hmm. So that's really made me think for a moment and say, Okay, I'll give you that. But it was well written, made me think about some things. So you never know what can spark change for the greater good, for all beings. So with the forgiveness practice, I think it's one of the hardest and most challenging practices of all. Everything we do, my opinion, that's hard. It's really hard. Because there's forgiving ourselves, that's hard. Forgiving someone else, that's harder. Having somebody forgive us, that's hardest. And then coming back and holding and forgiving ourselves, it just trumps them all. Because we all have our own internal demons around our stories and what they do to us and the suffering that it causes. So to have a forgiveness practice in relationship to wisdom, or in relationship to patience, or in relationship to equanimity, is pretty awesome. Because you can forgive your emotions that are really challenging, or you can forgive your shortcomings in a place of holding it with compassion and kindness, as opposed to the old stories, the old tapes that are about harming and rewounding. So you can do that not just for yourself in terms of your individual stuff, but for an emotion. When I thought about that, I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. I can forgive myself for being absent-minded and ignoring. How many times do I have to tell you? And you just glaze over and ignore it one more time. So I can forgive that, you know. I can forgive having expectations and being disappointed, because I'm bringing in kindness and I'm bringing in compassion to that. So I can forgive not being skillful without judging it. I can forgive being impatient. Oh my goodness. And be with kindness around holding that, holding it in a different way than the stories. I can forgive myself for having attachments and being confused about it, and being confused about longings and wanting what I want when I want it and can't get it. I can forgive myself about that. It's like, oh, okay. And you can do a little bit, and you can do a lot. So I'm going to invite you to do a little bit, not a lot. And to forgive, as we know, doesn't necessarily mean to forget. Because sometimes to forget is not wise. Our bodies remember everything. But to forgive is wise. And it's not easy. So I could do a forgiveness practice around being disappointed with my body going through something else now, and just like, I'm tired, I'm done. But I can hold myself with a little bit of kindness around it, saying, yes, it's understandable and it's okay. So there's a breadth and wealth and depth of materials in our life that we can practice around without judging, without comparing, and without blaming. So I'm going to invite you to do a very short practice with me. And I got this from Jack Kornfield. And I remember years ago when I first heard him teach this, I was like, oh my God, this is great, this is great. And it's so hard. Because there's a part of our being that once you forgive, there's a space now. You've made some spaciousness. And what do you fill it with? How do you create something new and not fall back on old patterns and old stories. And sometimes it's easier to fall back on old stories and old patterns than be with something new because it's so foreign. And you have to cultivate it, you know, like exercise. You have to exercise it so it becomes familiar. And it's like, oh, I'm doing that again. Oh, I don't have to do that. I can do something different. So it's skill building too. And I think practicing forgiveness is like a child learning to walk. You know, I can't remember if it was my niece or one of the children when they were little would walk one, I don't know how they did this. One leg was kind of walking and the other one was crawling. And I'm like, make up your mind. What are you going to do? And he weren't, and he wasn't ready to walk yet. So, you know, it was safety, like, okay, if I don't get this right, I can fall back on crawling. And it was so precious to watch because you're like, okay, I'm going to leave you alone. You get this one. And then they would stand up. And, you know, they would teeter around. And then feeling like, oh, I got this. I can walk. But they have no sense of anything around them. So they just speed off, you know, like, okay, I got this. Whoa, this is great. And their legs can only carry them so far. So practicing forgiveness is like that. A little bit at a time. And I was like, oh, okay. And then you learn to walk, and then you run, and off you go. And other times, it's like you have to relearn how to walk or something. I heard someone say that they just recently had a hip replacement, and I've had a few of those. And every time, you have to relearn how to walk. You have to be patient. There's pain, but it's not like it was before. And it's like, oh my God, I can move. Slowly. And gradually, your body becomes accustomed to doing that. And remembers. I remember when I was in the hospital and I woke up from the coma, I had to relearn everything. I couldn't write. So my daughter picked up the alphabet. I can't remember how she did it. And I would point to letters to try to spell. And then when I would write, I burst into tears because it just was scribbling. Now my mind is really busy and I'm trying to articulate, but I can't speak. I had a tube down my throat. And when I finally could, I was whispering like this. And it was just like, that's all I could say. And I thought I was being loud. And my daughter and friends would say, you have to speak up. I think they didn't want to say anything because they were just so glad I was awake. But my daughter was like, Mommy, nobody can hear you. And I was like, oh, maybe that's a good thing. So let's do this little practice for a little bit. And like the Buddha said, and you've heard this, you can search throughout the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself, and that person is not to be found anywhere. Anywhere. You yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserves your love and affection. That's cool. And it's true. And we have so many opportunities over and over again to practice. Oh, yes. I matter. What I say, what I do matters. So let's do this little exercise. I'm going to invite you to sit comfortably and allow your eyes to close and the breath to be natural and easy. And just let the body and the mind relax as much as possible. If you don't want to close your eyes, just have a soft gaze and look at something. Feel your connection to the earth, the land that we are sitting upon. And breathe gently into your whole body, especially into your heart. As you're breathing, feel all the barriers, as much as you can, that you've erected and the emotions you've carried because you haven't forgiven yourself. So think of something that, on a scale of 1 to 10, is maybe a 3. Maybe it had to do with being impatient, or you weren't so skillful or wise, or you became attached to the outcome and you wanted it to be the way you wanted it to be. Let yourself feel the pain of keeping your heart closed. Maybe sitting with the disappointment or the sadness. Or the desire to be more skillful, more wise, be more patient. Now with whatever that experience is in your mind, this is a phrase that you could say. For any way that I have caused harm to myself, knowingly or unknowingly, in thought, word, or deed, may I forgive myself. And if I cannot do so in this moment, may I be able to forgive myself in the future. And just notice how that lands. Where it's settled at, and looking at whatever it is that you are having a challenge with, and if you notice if you can hold it a little lighter, hold yourself with a little more kindness, a little more care, a little more tenderness. May I let go of wanting the present moment to be anything else than it is. And may I allow mistakes and injuries and suffering and pain to be part of life as it is in this moment. And when you're ready, you can take a full breath and open your eyes. So sometimes I remember to forgive myself. Most of the time I forget. And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. So this is part of our practice, is to bring forgiveness into it. And it helps, I think, ease some of the tension around the impatientness of life. Or ease some of the frustration around not having the outcome you want. And just says, there's a little room here, and it's okay. That's what's important, too, to understand, is that it's okay in this forgiveness practice that it was hard and that you want this way. It's okay. It's just not going to happen. And can you come to a place of kindness in your own heart to be accepting of that? And that can be hard because the patterns in some of our lives are so embedded that it seems like nothing can shift it, and nothing can change it. And we know the story of the second arrow, where the first arrow is about, this is the pain. This is it. And then the second arrow is what we do to make it worse. And we all do this. You all are smiling, so I can see it even if you don't. I can see you smiling because you know you've done it. It's like having a toothache. You know your toothache hurts, so then what do? You make it worse. It's like, oh, okay, I can live with this. I don't need to call the dentist. I'm going to be okay. And it's like, not really. So be kind to yourself. Be gentle. Let's see. Thich Nhat Hanh says, the practice of forgiveness is the practice of understanding and compassion. Understanding is the substance of true love and true compassion. So we have these opportunities. We have our life. Our life, our opportunities, all the time. To practice kindness, to practice wisdom, to practice patience, to be equanimous. Because sometimes we are asked to call upon to be smarter than we think we are. And then we're consoling someone else who's resentful, who is impatient, who is not skillful, and you're telling them, this was not really well done, was it? Then you turn around and become the teacher to an experience that you might even have difficulty with. But you have an opportunity as a gift, you have an opportunity or a gift that's saying, someone else needs me right now. And let me step up to be there for them. That's wonderful. That is being kind. Now we're not going around and saying, or you're not going around and saying, or I'm not going around and saying, I am being kind. See, look at me. This is kindness. Not, it comes spontaneously from a place that you really want to offer something to someone. And so you might surprise yourself and find out you're more skillful than you thought. You're more caring than you thought. You're more wise than you thought. You're more patient than you thought. It's like, wow. So in this situation, it's okay. I'm okay. And this is our practice. This is what's so wonderful about the Buddhist teachings is it's a practice. And we can start again and start again. And can I say it again? And start again. Because this is what we get to cultivate wisdom. We get to cultivate patience. And we get to cultivate equanimity. And they're worthwhile, outstanding qualities to have. And if you're a parent or a grandparent or you've got children or been around children, you know they look to you, they look up to you, and they ask you questions, and they're watching you. Doesn't matter what age they are, they're going to watch you. And they're not interested so much in what you're saying, they're watching what you do. And sometimes you get it right. And that's a good thing. And that's our practice. And thank you for now we have maybe Yeah, we get a little bit of time if anybody has any question or comment they want to make. Thank you, Bill.
I work in a school and have a toolbox. Teach that skill to children.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of my favorite ones is the patient tool. For each tool they have, there's like a little saying that goes with it. So for patients, they say, I'm strong enough to wait. And what I realized is people think that patience is kind of like showing a weakness.
Yeah.
That you're somehow weak. It's a weak thing to do. And I really like the idea that you have to be strong enough to wait.
To wait.
That's a saying that I hear in my head now, mm-hmm, when I'm feeling impatient. That no, I'm strong enough to wait.
That's such a cool thing to say. I like that. I am strong. No, tell a 2-year-old that. That's a different story. They're looking at you like, right. A 5-year-old will work.
For reminding us about forgiveness practice.
You're welcome.
I've had to learn to forgive the way things are.
Yes.
Rather than forgive myself, I forgot to forgive myself for being impatient the way things are. But I forgive people I love for aging. I forgive people for dying. I forgive life for being the way it is.
Yeah.
Because I find it so challenging that I realize I can't hold a grudge against it because that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I've used the forgiveness practice for that.
I think that's a wonderful way to use it. And what strikes me about that is that there's such compassion there. You know, it's like when I got cancer, I forgave myself for getting that. Not in terms of why me, but just, this is how it is. This is how it is. And it's interesting how making room for situations or life's happenings where it seems impossible, it just lightens the load a little bit or makes it a little more bearable. That compassion is amazing.
First of all, thank you for all of it. Every word, thank you. And one thing that stood out for me a lot, among several things that stood out for me a lot, is what you see isn't always what the person is experiencing.
Yeah.
Somebody can look well and not be well. Somebody
yeah.
can look happy and not be happy. And I think that's really hard for people to get.
Yeah. I think so too. And it reminds me of last weekend with some of the people in the room. One woman was sharing about some major surgery she had, and I was just thinking about what you just said. God, to look at you. You look like you're jogging and you're going to the gym, and this is what's going on. It was humbling in that moment. Thank you.
We're all doctors. We have plenty of patience. A good doctor keeps us in stitches. The sutures are dissolving and the laughter is revolving.
Thank you.
I'm on the other side. I'm trying to build a new habit. I'm very disappointed in myself. I have no equanimity around it. I have no patience with myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I keep doing the old thing. So I'm not very kind, I know I'm not. Not very compassionate, I know I'm not. But I'm also not learning a new habit.
Right. And sometimes that's what it is. That's just the way it is in that moment, because there's room for it to shift. And that's a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Last one. Over in the corner.
No, no, I was pointing to you. Oh. Years ago, I couldn't forgive someone. I was a man who'd done me wrong.
Mm-hmm. we've all been there, huh?
I mean, sort of like, I'm right that you done me wrong. I don't want you to ever think you did. And sometimes they do you wrong.
Yes.
And yet there is that desire, that sort of holding on to something about being, it's right that I'm supposed to be angry at the way things are. You know, it's right that I, that Byron McHugh's will is not followed with by everyone all the time. And I found myself sometimes being that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the monkey mind is just like over and over and over and over. You can't get out of it. Thank you. Thank you all.